Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At chumbacasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions 18+.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At chumbacasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions 18+.
Welcome, everyone, to Rock'em Nation Podcast. This is a brand new episode of Dive Cuts. We are on Season 6, Episode 11. Here to talk all about your Missouri Tigers, the undefeated 9-0 Missouri Tigers. Shout it from the rooftops. Tweet at Jeff Goodman. I think it's, what is it, at Goodman Hoops. Tell Jeff Goodman how good your Missouri Tigers are. They're undefeated. No questions about the resume. I'm your host, Sam Stelling. With me, as always, back after a brief hiatus, Matthew J. Harris. Matt, a little under the weather, but you're here.
I'm back. I don't know if the masses, and by masses, I mean maybe 1,000 people who have this, sent to their phones are happy or not. But I'm back. Took a brief hiatus to help, with a family matter last week in Columbia. Matt Watkins filled in ably for me, and now I'm back tonight. Gonna play through the strep throat game. Is that what we're gonna call it? I know MJ had his flu game, but this is gonna be a strep throat game for me. But it's okay, because we have a legitimately good basketball game and a quality opponent to talk about. So that's almost as good as antibiotics. On a night like this,
almost as good as trolling Goodman Hoops. I do kind of want to start on this because I think it is kind of funny that, look, everyone that you and I interact with on a regular basis, and the tweeters that that we see the tweets from and all that kind of stuff, we're all excited about Missouri's 9-0 start. It's been mostly fun. They have not played a great schedule. They have, they did have a nice road win against a top 100 opponent. Like, I don't think anybody, out there is actually thinking that Missouri is anything they're not at this point, which is still a little bit of a mystery, and whether or not they can do the things that they've done against lesser opponents, once the competition steps up. But for some reason, Jeff Goodman in the field of 68, whatever the site is that he's working for now, I guess got irritated enough to try to, like, troll Missouri fans about them giving him a hard time for, I guess, not not ranking Missouri, which very clearly, like, Missouri doesn't really have a resume that you would want to rank at this point. I'm not anti giving them votes. Like, if you want to drop them in at 25th, whatever, it's early December. None of the votes actually mean anything right now. But hey, they beat who they were scheduled to play, and that's what matters. Right, Matt?
Yeah. I think I told you, like, when I first saw, like, Goodman's, I guess I'm going to not call it a campaign, but his recent antics, it's very clearly, at least to me, an engagement ploy. Like, Jeff and Rob Doster, who I both like, who are both plugged in and really knowledgeable guys, and I enjoy some of their pods they do. You know, they're trying to get Field of 68 cranking. You know, they're trying to get that established in the media marketplace, and you need engagement to do that. And, you know, this is kind of Goodman's shtick. You know, he likes to rile up Texas Tech fans, likes to rile up Illinois and Arkansas fans, and, you know, now it's time to rile up Missouri fans because, you know.
He's the one who, like, he was going hard at, like, who is it, Stackhouse? And
yeah, he likes to go at Jerry Stackhouse, and so he's got his things that, and his little, you know, like, I'll say it's a shtick, but the thing is, like, Twitter is not real life. I think most Missouri fans don't think the Tigers are a top 25 team. Second of all, like, I've looked into the mentions on this stuff, and there's maybe 3 or 4 people tweeting at him. It's not like,
yeah,
the hordes of Missouri fans are invading Jeff Goodman's mentions, begging, pleading for him to slot them 24th. It's like,
right.
If anything, it's just Missouri fans, like, coming back at him being like, look, man, we're just happy to be 9-0. Like, quit talking shit because we're happy. Like, I think, so for me, it's, I don't even really get outraged.
Yeah, I think the last tweet that he quote tweeted was something along the lines of, you know, like, what's Missouri's record? Like, it wasn't even like, the first one, I think, said something like, rank them, coward, or something like that, you know, which is, if you're not on Twitter, like, that's a very common refrain. Like, you know, people are basically trolling and kind of having fun, like,
yeah, you know, so I can't tell
people cowards for not, yeah, like, I'm sure, who is our Jesse KU guy, what was his last name? Oh, shoot,
I'm blanking on it now, I mentioned it the other day. Newell, Jesse Newell. Like, and here's the thing,
Jesse Newell,
I was never mad at Jesse. I thought it was silly to, like, outsource your ballot to KenPom, but I respected Jesse's overarching view, which is, like, Missouri's body of work was not quite indicative or didn't exactly align with the underlying analytic metrics that you and I look at, that we really value.
Well, so the one season he caught a lot of heat from Missouri fans,
I thought that was more justifiable.
He's consistently underranked Auburn, and Auburn fans hate that guy because he goes by the metrics, and, like, you know, like, the whole thing is, like, I get it, you know, but you have to also, like, early in the season, you have to understand, like, you have to factor in resume, you know, because early in the season there's preseason expectations baked into KenPom. We've talked about this, so we don't really need to rehash it, but I just think, like, it's funny to me that, like, you know, Goodman makes it come across as though he's just being inundated with like just an endless amount of Mizzou fans. And I, you know, went into his mentions, and it's like, yeah, it's like 3, maybe 4 people who are just like, ha ha ha. And they're clearly, like, trolling along with him. Like, it's a back and forth thing. Like, it's a fun situation. But then your boy Kevin Sweeney at CBB _ Central said, my favorite part about Mizzou fans going crazy about their undefeated start is that the Tigers have actually dropped from 41 to 49 in KenPom since the beginning of the season. Mizzou fans aren't going crazy. Like, I don't know where people, like, what Twitter accounts people are reading that like, Mizzou fans are going crazy. Are they happy with the start of the Dennis Gates era? I'd say so. Yeah, I think everybody's pretty happy with it.
Everyone I think everyone that you and I interact with, and again, Twitter is a terrible sample size of anything. They're mostly measured in like what they think here. Like everyone knows the schedule.
Well, even like, you know, comments on Rock'em Nation, and you know, we post stuff to Facebook, and I, you know, unfortunately have to read those comments too. But everybody's like, yeah, pretty happy. I mean, everybody knows the schedule's not been great. Like we've been very upfront about that. So it's just like, it's bizarre. It's just like, oh, you know, but Sweeney was also the guy that was basically down talking Mizzou and up talking Florida. And I think last I checked, Mizzou was ranked ahead of Florida.
They're tied. Florida is 48th and Missouri's 49th. But Florida's dropped 13 spots in KenPom.
Yeah. Which is a more precipitous drop, shall we say.
Which, again, this is my annual spiel. And I do it on Twitter, and I did it in the piece I wrote yesterday, and I'll say it here. The first 10 games of the year, to me, are really just a wait-and-see period. Like, we've been doing the video breakdowns, and we do the preview, and we do the pod, but I think a lot of it is we're watching sort of the sample size grow, and we're just sort of learning about this team, and we're sort of figuring out its play style, how they want to, you know, manage the rotation. I hate when we get 6 or 7 games in and we talk about who's had a great start. Like, there's 23 games left. Most of these teams most high majors are going to probably have 20 Q1 and Q2 opportunities in the course of a year. Like, the first 10 games are really for us just to feel out what we have, which is why I'm glad that we have Kansas coming Saturday. I mean, that's a, you know, not quite the steady increase in competition and caliber competition I would have wanted, but it's going to get here, and we're going to figure out, you know, how, you know, durable this start is. But, you know, I don't see Missouri fans going out here stumping and spamming accounts for a top 25 vote. I think people are just happy to have a fun brand of basketball that they've watched for 9 games. They're modestly or cautiously optimistic for Saturday. And I think they just want to see this team compete at a high level. And, you know, if they get a win, they get a win. So I've been sort of, you know, pretty happy with, you know, how I think the fan base, or at least sort of the temperature of the room, has been throughout this start. So I think that's what annoys me more, is that there are national guys acting like Missouri fans are somehow being irrational or just outright, you know, sort of antagonistic, because they're not. They're just really happy right now. So just let us be happy, and don't try and make it seem like we're coming at you in an angry mob.
Yeah, it was that. I think I retweeted Goodman's like original kind of beef that he had. It was like several days ago, and just sort of did the gif of like, shh, like let people enjoy things. Really, like, that's what it comes down to. Is I legitimately think that, like, at this point, most of us Mizzou fans, like the overwhelming majority, are just happy to have a team that's kind of fun to watch. Last year was so horrible. It was really painstakingly bad to watch that team play basketball. And even when this team, like, isn't playing well, they're still fun, because it's scattered. it's a lot of pace, and yeah, like, you know, the defense is still ramped up, and you know, and they're still putting up shots, and maybe those shots aren't going in, but it's up and down. And right now, Matt, Missouri is third in adjusted tempo in the country, ninth in average possession length on offense, 67th on defense. And again, like I repeat, like they're 9-0. I think the goal when you looked at the schedule was you wanted to be 9-0 by the time you got to Kansas. If you maybe dropped the game at Wichita State, it was understandable. Maybe you have a fight. I think ideally we kind of thought, you know, they'd probably get a little bit of a fight from Penn. They'd probably get a fight from Coastal Carolina. But everybody else, you should beat handily. And for the most part, like, it's gone according to plan. Like, I think you and I were kind of, you know, chatting about like the early start Southern Indiana. You know, really, that was a blowout that got close late because Southern Indiana just all of a sudden just decided to hit every three-pointer they took. You know, and then like Penn was a little bit of a tighter affair, but it never really felt like Missouri wasn't in control. You know, Lindenwood, SIUE, both huge blowouts. Mississippi Valley State, they didn't play well, and they still won big. Coastal Carolina, they played well, won big. Houston Christian, they played well, won big. And then they pulled it out at Wichita State. And at that point, you're sort of thinking, okay, like this is kind of what we were hoping for the season to start with. Get to a point where you can be 9-0 for that Kansas game. And there is your first real, real measuring stick. Obviously, like with where Missouri is, any road win, especially like a top 100 road win, is going to be a good road win. But playing against Kansas, playing against Illinois, playing against Kentucky and Arkansas, which are four of the next five games, like, this is where you're really going to understand what this team is and sort of what kind of, I guess, season. You know, not that the next five games are going to define the season, but I think it's going to define maybe the expectations for the season.
Yeah. When I wrote the piece yesterday, you know, when the net rankings arrived and Missouri was 34th, you know, it was sort of important to understand the context of how they got there, which is they really, really just crushed the efficiency metric, which doesn't necessarily adjust. I mean, the NCAA keeps under lock and key, but people who are smarter at designing algorithms, you know, I am, have said that, like, it's pretty clear, like, they're not adjusting for efficiency margin the way that other, you know, sort of outlets do. You know, we know how KenPom does it. I think Evan Maia does Bayesian adjustments for opponent quality. So you can kind of game the system a little bit, even if the SOS is bad. But you look out at the far right-hand columns, and you look at that Q1 and Q2 column, and there's, you know, one quad two win. And that's at Wichita State. And really, you know, the way I sort of put it was, if you were to seed the NCAA tournament today, Missouri's net ranking would be in a range where you would put them in the, you know, the S curve, they'd be in there, but they'd probably be towards the back. And then you really start getting into discussions over seeding, and that's where you start looking at those Q1 and Q2 victories. So I think the way to think about it is, at least in the eyes of the NCAA's metric, which becomes more like KenPom over time as more games go in, but at least right now, in the eyes of the NCAA's, you know, sort of selection tool, they'd probably be in line for a bid. But it wouldn't be a very good bid because they don't have, obviously, the resume quality, you know, and the wins that you want. Kansas is an opportunity, regardless of, you know, the sort of, you know, history and, you know, conflict that's there. It's a top 15 KenPom team coming to your place. And, you know, as we'll talk about, there are some areas and contours of this matchup that, you know, are favorable or can work in Mizzou's favor stylistically. So this is an opportunity if you're Missouri. I think, one, if you just think about the optics that this program is trying to clearly set up with the way the schedule was arranged and going into this game, if you win this, you go 10-0. Dennis Gates is going to buy himself a lot of political capital early here, and I think that can't be understated, you know, here, because Konzo pretty much burned what was ever in savings last year when they went to Lawrence and just got hammered. So the optics here, I think, are one thing for the fan base. You know, there's probably a win that could put them in the top 25. You know, I think they could probably earn themselves into the back end of the receiving votes category. They're just still, the resume is going to be a little too weak. But the bigger deals are going to get a Q1 win, and they're going to have two Q1 and Q2 wins, and they're probably going to need 7 or 8 by the time the year is done to really give themselves a chance. So if you just think about it, you know, if the goal here is to, you know, surprise folks, or if you think you can, you know, pull off, you know, kind of what Iowa State did a year ago, this is one you got to pocket. And so I think that's the bigger deal for me, is that's why I think there's so much weight around it, is it can fix the optics. You know, it can sort of, I think, you know, quiet up guys like Goodman and Kevin Sweeney. But more than anything else, it banks you a quality win. Because Kansas is unlikely going to fall so far that this is not going to be a quad one win the rest of the year. If you can bank one this early, do it. And really just see what comes after that. Because UCF might be a borderline Q1, Q2 type of situation. Illinois will definitely be a quad one win, but that's on a neutral floor. And then you got Kentucky coming down. Kentucky's looked a little rickety, but still, I think Kansas is an opportunity that if it's right there for you, you got to take it right now. So that's, I don't think you can undersell the value of what they could pull out of Saturday.
So let's talk about Kansas. For anyone who's unfamiliar with Kansas, they are one of the so-called blue bloods of college basketball. Coached by a man by the name of Bill Self. They're in the Big 12 Conference. They're currently 8-1. The reigning national champions. Kansas was awesome last year. They were really, really good. A lot of experience around the perimeter. I think having basically NBA players with Christian Braun. Brown and Ochai Agbaji, Remy Martin,
David McCormick,
all on the perimeter, and then David McCormick in the middle. They were really a team that was always going to contend for a title. Having to play Kansas in Allen Fieldhouse is never a good thing, but particularly with the roster that Martin and his squad assembled last year, that was always going to end poorly, and it did. So this year, Kansas is a little bit of a different look. They don't have McCormick, so they don't really have an interior anchor the way that they've kind of had in the past, really. I mean, it wasn't that long ago. Guy's name is escaping me.
I mean, they were
gigantic.
They had Udoka Azubuike.
Udoka. Yeah, Azubuike. Had to go back a couple years. They don't have anybody like that. They do have a couple good-looking freshmen in Ernest Uda and Ude, maybe you say it that way.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
And then, who's the other guy? Is it a Ajiafor?
Zubi Ajiafor and Ernest Ude. Ude's a five-star. Ajiafor is a four-star kid. But they're both freshmen. Both freshmen.
But they don't play a lot. And this is sort of like one of the things when it comes to, Bill Self is really... very rarely sort of relied heavily on freshmen, and we'll get kind of to Grady Dick here in a second. So they play small a lot. KJ Adams and Jalen Wilson kind of man the four and the five. Both those guys run about 6'7", 6'8", but they're more kind of like a combo forward than they are, post players. So, think more along the lines of like Aiden Shaw or, really even like even Kobe Brown is like bigger and stronger. He's probably, I'd say KJ Adams is probably similar to
Adam,
Kobe.
On an old roster, KJ Adams would have been a wing for them. Like on an older, like more vintage Bill Self rosters when he was still running twin post high low, he would have been a wing for them. But he's moved down to the four. Wilson is more of a straight, even in today's game would probably be a four, but they play him at the five. They kind of alternate what they do a little bit. they'll take turns on fives defensively. You know, it's still a scheme that's going to be mostly man. Bill does not play zone at all this year. He's gone back to his roots. Synergy confirms Bill has not played any zone this year. It's going to be straight man, but Adams and Wilson take turns kind of defending the five. I think of Adams, if you wanted to, you could think of him as a five because he plays more in pick and roll with DeJuan Harris. So if you want to cast him as the five offensively, that probably makes sense.
Yeah, and I think he's got kind of like a big, strong, he's a little bit better of an athlete than Kobe, but I think that sort of like that, like he can play on the inside because he is strong enough to kind of handle himself down there.
Yeah.
At point guard, Columbia native DeJuan Harris, the same guy who started for them last year. They do have Joseph Yusufu, who's, you know, plays a lot. He was a transfer from Drake. Didn't play much last year. And they have a another freshman. Pettiford's a sophomore.
Oh. Yep. Pettiford is a sophomore. Still struggling with turnovers. They are not a deep group. Like, I think, you know, before we get too deep into the bench here, they are not running a lot of bodies out here. Bill, I think right now, is 286th nationally in using his bench. This is, you know, we'll talk personnel more specifically, but I think the point you made about them not only just playing five out and with undersized small ball guys is, you know, look at, you know, their D1 experience here, 242nd nationally. Their continuity minutes, basically the percentage of minutes that have the same guy playing, you know, from year to year. They're 218th, and they're 286th in bench minutes, like I mentioned a year ago. They're very small, you know, relative to, you know, what we're used to from Bill teams. You know, they are young. You know, they're still trying to sort out kind of what the rotation looks like, and they really do lean heavily on their starters. If you're going to look at kind of what they, you know, they may, you know, bring Yesufu in to spell Harris a little bit. They may play Uday, you know, or big. Maybe sometimes it's Zach Clemens, sometimes it's Uday. You know, 10 to 12 minutes a game. You know, MJ Rice might get some spot duty, but really they're going to ride their starters, and they're going to lean heavily on them. And it's, you know, as we'll talk about, I think if you're Missouri, you like the idea that you're going to have, you know, a starting five, you know, where you have a transfer and Kevin McCullough still settling in, and you've got two underclassmen at the three and the four spots, and you've got Jalen Wilson, who's really good, but it's still mostly a five-man group here. And Missouri's been rolling, you know, assuming everything is right, about 9 or 10 deep. So there's a situation here where I think, you know, Missouri may be able to roll more fresh bodies through. So I think that's something right off the top that you kind of have to keep in mind as you begin breaking down, you know, how these teams are going to, you know, plan for each other and how they're going to game plan for this one.
So I did kind of think it was interesting that, you know, Self really went hard after Kevin McCullough and in the off season. And realistically, I think a lot of people kind of thought that was going to be the natural landing spot for Isaiah Mosley. You basically link him back up with his high school teammate, DeJuan Harris. But Self wanted McCullough. McCullough is not a flashy guy. He committed to Texas Tech, played for Chris Beard and then Mark Adams, big time defensive, sort of off the ball guard, not a guy you really want handling the ball a whole lot. But he's an experienced guy. He doesn't really give them a ton of offense. This offense really clicks when Jalen Wilson is kind of doing his thing and when Grady Dick is hitting outside shots. I think those are the two guys you're probably worried the most about when it comes to the offense. Jalen Wilson is currently number two in the KenPom MVP race. And I will sort of put a little caveat to that because I don't even need to look it up, but I can tell you who number one is. And right now, that is not a race. So being number two is essentially like being number one.
Yeah.
Because Zach Edey at Purdue is so dominant that he has won the MVP of every game that they played, which is pretty amazing. But Jalen Wilson's been awesome. He's got a 110 offensive rating. He's hitting 35% of his threes. He's rebounding well. He's his assist rate is up, his turnover rate is down. He's getting to the free throw line. He's doing everything I think that they were kind of maybe hoping that he would do more of last year. So it's almost like a lot of things are finally clicking for him.
Yeah, I think he's, you know, they've used him in some creative ways as a secondary ball handler. He's shooting the ball really well, you know, or at least at a decent enough clip out of the gate that you feel confident about, you know, what he can give to them. It's, you know, he can play as a jumbo creator. You can, you know, put him as a roller in some situations. You know, he can play off the ball a little bit. And, you know, the one thing Bill's done a little bit, not so much this year, but more last year, was he's really embraced getting out in transition, letting his guys play on the break quite a bit. So, you know, you can move Wilson around in different pieces. You can use him in different ways. He's really adaptable, which I think is important. But I guess the question that you have to ask is, behind him, who's that secondary guy? And a lot of people are going to say, well, it's Grady Dick. But Grady Dick is still, you know, a freshman who is, you know, can shoot the heck out of the ball, In high school, better athlete than you think, but still kind of learning how to finish at the college level, still learning how to play, you know, through contact and with a little more physicality as a rim finisher. You know, but he's a guy who, you know, who Bill can use as a spacer, or, you know, he can use him in some weak side screening action as kind of a decoy if he needs to, which is where he can set up a guy like, you know, DeJuan Harris to, you know, play in the pick and roll with KJ Adams. You can kick to a spot up shooter, you know, in Wilson, and he can play off the catch, or you can get it to McCuller and he can try and shoot it a little bit as a 3 and D guy. The pieces kind of fit, but you really kind of need, you know, I think McCuller right now is shooting the ball really well. You know, they're all kind of shooting the ball well from the perimeter, but it'll be interesting to see just how, you know, Missouri approaches, you know, what they want to do, I think, in a lot of ball screen situations. But Wilson's playing really, really well. I don't know if there's a guy, you know, on Missouri's team who could, you know, be a shutdown guy on him. You know, Wilson's 6'8", 225. You know, they've usually, deployed Des Moines Hodge on the best player. Would they consider going longer stretches with Trey Chameleon, who I think will have the strength to hang in there a little bit with him, and, you know, can bump him and be a little bit more physical on the ball with him? We'll see, but I'm sort of curious who they deploy in that situation, because I don't think you're going to, you know, send Kobe Brown at him, but I'll be curious, you know, what Missouri decides to do defensively in that situation.
Yeah, I think you probably are going to have to start with Kobe on him and just make sure that Kobe understands that he has to play smart. Looking at sort of who they've been starting, it's pretty much been, you know, Harris, McCuller, Wilson, Dick, and KJ Adams. So that is going to kind of be the guy. I think Des Moines is a good fit to sort of shadow Grady Dick, and then, you know, you have Nick Honor.
Getting into DeJuan Harris and sort of...
Yeah, getting, because he's good at sort of, you know, being able to be physical. You know, Harris
getting under guys,
good ball handler. Harris isn't a super, like, big strong kid. He's still pretty slight. So, you know, maybe you can kind of, you know, turn his speed up a little bit, and you know, and then I think maybe you just let Golston, you know, check McCuller. And put Hodge there. Since KJ Adams really is kind of like a non-offensive guy, like, he's not really gonna,
like, if you'll find a Carter takes.
I mean, so you line him up with Carter. So I think that's probably how you start. If Gamillion's your first guy off the bench, and maybe you try him against Wilson to try to get up under his legs a little bit, you can, you know, have some rotations where maybe you give Aiden Shaw a little bit of a look. Aiden off the ball has been kind of a disaster.
If you turn him on the ball, if
you can get him, like, get his attention sort of turned around, putting him in some ball screens and handoffs and stuff like that, I think could kind of, get him into trouble. And then, you know, for me, the big question is, like, you know, are we actually seeing the reality on Isaiah Mosley, or is there more going on? And because I always sort of earmarked this game as a game where if Mosley was ever going to kind of get loose, like, this could be the game where he was going to get loose. Mainly because I think that he wanted to go to Kansas. You know, I know, like, a lot of Mizzou fans are probably going to get mad hearing something like that. But, you know, like, you got to also remember, like, kids that are in college now and you know, high school all that recently don't really remember Mizzou Kansas as a rivalry. And if you're, like, growing up and you're not a diehard Mizzou fan, like, you don't think of Kansas as your rival. You just think of Kansas as a great program.
And two of his best friends went to school there.
Right. So it's just like, okay, so, all right. So your buddy is there and he's on the roster. It's like, okay, like, I kind of want to go play with him. So I always kind of thought Mosley really wanted to be a KU. And so once they sort of moved to McCullough and made McCullough the priority and basically were turning their back on Mosley, then I sort of thought that, like, if Missouri got him, then he was going to want to go, you know, nuclear on Bill Self.
And this is a game, I think, where you can...
Is he going to get the chance?
This is a game where I think you want... Well, the conditions are ripe for that, because they've been using him more as a combo guard. You know, I know in the preseason, some people thought, oh, he's going to probably play more as a wing. Well, he's been a combo guard. And you feel really good about that if, you know, Kevin McCullough's that guy. You know, Kevin McCullough will probably track him. Grady Dick would be on DeMoy Hodge, and, you know, McCullough's a good defender, but, you know, if anything, you know, when Mosley's out there, he can decoy it and at least create opportunities for other people. And, you know, defensively, you can put him on McCullough and feel okay about where you're going to be. I think that that's sort of been the question at times, is, you know, how locked in and engaged is Mosley, you know, on the defensive end? If he's got to check McCullough, that's not a bad matchup for him. And realistically, you know, McCullough is a really, really strong on-ball guard, but, you know, I would rather have Grady Dick trying to, you know, keep tabs on DeMoy Hodge, or I would rather, you know, DeJuan Harris having to, you know, sort of, you know, deal with Nick Honor. You know, there are some opportunities, I think, you know, for Mosley to have kind of a coming out party here, especially if, you know, McCullough, you know, has to go to the bench for some reason and Yesterfood comes in. You know, I think there's chances for him to eat a little bit. The bigger thing to me, aside from Mosley, is just how, and, you know, aside from the personnel matchups, is just how does Missouri want to play in this game? You know, are they going to continue to want to play fast and impose the pace here? Because I think that that's, you know, Kansas is going to be comfortable going at that speed. But, you know, the decisions that Missouri has to make defensively to force tempo, you know, could create some opportunities for Kansas too. So it's sort of, we can talk about that. But I think there's some balancing of, you know, the risks and scales there that Missouri is going to have to consider, you know, if they get out there. And I think if you put Mosley out there, will Kansas target him defensively and say, you know, we want to try and get him, you know, switched onto Grady and chasing Grady off pin downs or off staggers or, you know, off flares? Do we want to really make Mosley work and really tire him out defensively? So I think that that's going to be kind of interesting. I think he's capable of giving Missouri something offensively, but Bill's going to have, you know, based on my calendar, 9 days to figure out how he can torture this team too. So I think the nice part is, you know, about with Mosley is he again gives you sort of the late clock closer if the offense isn't working. But, you know, how is Bill going to try and take him away if he's available? So there's an opportunity there, but I'm always sort of hesitant going into this with as much sort of prep time as Kansas has had to get ready for it.
Yeah, the timing is one of those things. Like, for all of the disdain that, you know, I personally have for Bill Self, I don't care for him. I do recognize that he's an outstanding basketball coach, and there's a reason he's a multi time winner of the national championship. There's a reason why Kansas has won just an ungodly amount of Big 12 titles since he's taken over that program. Like, that's not normal stuff even for Blue Bloods, like, you know, you go look at the ACC, like, you know, under Coach K, the last 20 years, how many ACC titles did they win? Roy Williams, kind of the same thing, like, Hall of Fame coach, how many ACC titles did they win? Like, Kansas runs the Big 12, and it's a huge upset when they don't win the Big 12. And even when they don't win, like, it's not like they fall all the way down to, like, sixth. Like, it's okay, like, you squeaked out a win. And, like, even so, what was it, Missouri's last year in the league, you know, was 2012. Yeah, so 2012, they go 30-5,
two games behind Kansas in the standings.
Yeah, like, well, and really it came down to the fact that they could not beat Kansas State, and they dropped, like, what was one bad road game.
They dropped Kansas a road State. Game to Oklahoma State. They got swept by Kansas State, lost to Oklahoma State, lost to Kansas in overtime.
Yeah. Number of Big 12 titles under Bill Self is really borderline obscene. And yes, he's done a lot of cheating, and yes, he's as scuzzy as they come, but the dude can coach, and I fully expect them to be very, very ready for what Missouri is about to bring. In a lot of ways, though, like, I actually am kind of excited for this for Dennis Gates. I think you and I both are kind of in the similar thought that that, you know, Gates has sort of shown early here so much that he's really a pretty smart and understanding basketball coach. He kind of gets it, and I'm really kind of curious to see, like, what this is going to look like in his first kind of real big game as a head coach.
I think they'll probably stick to a lot. I think, you know, I mentioned a couple of minutes ago, I'm curious what they do pace wise. I think they're committed to that. I think they're going to try and get the pace up. I think they're going to try to get into Kansas's legs a little bit and try and tax them. You know, there's enough experience on this roster, and, you know, Bill's, you know, been to Mizzou Arena enough that I don't know how much the building is going to affect Kansas, but I think it will help Missouri, you know, have some energy, you know, feed a little bit, you know, maintain the sort of, you know, kinetic force they kind of need to stay engaged defensively and get this thing sped up. Bill Self is used to seeing Missouri teams that want to speed you up in Mizzou Arena. So again, a little bit, you know, this will be old hat for him. But can Missouri, you know, get this tempo where they want to get it? Can they begin to start to, you know, sap some stamina? Can they begin to have that second unit really get in there? They've really used kind of that first wave of subs, you know, with its Gamillion, East, and Shaw to really sort of ratchet the tempo up. They really start to ball hawk a little more. They really start to take it, you know, risks and gaps. You know, you'll see, you know, if a ball handler gets turned, you'll see, you know, Sean East come in and try and, you know, dig the ball out from the backside. You'll see, you know, Trey Gamillion get in and basically try and rip the ball out of somebody's arms when he stunts. Aiden Shaw can, you know, provide some, you know, help in traps. He also does a good job sort of rotating over and providing some rim protection. They really start to ball hawk a little more, and they really push off misses. They really, really get out. You know, Shawnee's gets his head up. He's looking to fire baseball passes. They're really looking to push the pace a little bit. And to me, that feels like kind of there's a trade-off that's going to come with that defensively. But if Missouri can get some traction with that, get a working margin, and then sort of really, you know, be able to disrupt, I think. I don't think you're going to be – this team is not going to be one where I think they're going to be able to completely put the clamps on Kansas, but disrupt them enough what they want to do in the half court, you know, particularly, you know, in ball screens with DeJuan Harris. And I think they've got a path forward here. But it's going to be really, really interesting how much energy they have, how, you know, how intent they are at keeping the pace up. I think they will, but it's going to be interesting to see just, you know, to what lengths and what sort of risks they're willing to take in order to do that against a team that's got a really veteran guard. And that has a coach who I think understands acutely what Missouri's weaknesses are and runs stuff that can really take advantage of, you know, the trade-offs that Missouri's willing to make.
Yeah, and I'd also, you know, kind of point out that the rotation against Southeast Missouri State got really pretty tight in the second half. You know, as Missouri kind of struggled to sort of maintain that separation. And this is one of those things, like,
you know, so you want to play 10
deep. To run a lot of bodies. Yeah, like it's easy to run a lot of bodies when you're up by 15. Like you can experiment, you can run guys out there and see how it goes. But like the chances of Missouri having like a 15 and 20 point lead in this game are probably pretty low. I don't want to say that they don't exist, because like I think you and I understand, like, you know, how things can swing in college basketball. Like, I think either one of these teams could see a 20 point lead at some point. But how does, you know, how is Dennis Gates going to manage his lineup when things are tighter, when the talent level on the other side of the floor is higher? Like, it's one thing going up against Wichita State, you know, at Wichita State, I think Missouri overall still looked like they were pretty much the more talented team. But that's not going to be the case on Saturday. Like Kansas is going to have more talent. Like, Grady Dick is going to be an awesome freshman. And you know, Jalen Wilson is going to be the best player in the floor. So, like, how do they adjust? How do they, you know, how do they adapt to a different look and changing up the rotations? It will be interesting. It is Kansas State week. I know the social media videos have been flying. I know that, you know, fans are excited. The building is, you know, sold out. It's going to be rocking. So how do they adjust?
They've really sort of pared back Aiden Shaw's minutes. I think part of that's been a concerted effort to get, you know, Ronnie DeGray feeling good and get him integrated a little bit. But, you know, Ronnie, is he a guy who, you know, you want to have going at that pace and sort of playing in the open floor? That's sort of an, you know, one where I think you're going to prefer to have Shaw. But as we've said, Shaw gets, you know, a little bit turned around defensively at times, and Bill's going to put, you know, I could see Bill, you know, saying, you know, kid's a freak athletically, you know, can do a lot of different things. We're going to make him work. We're going to make him have to figure out where he is in rotation. We're going to put him in ball screens. We're going to see how he, you know, dissects stuff in real time, and we're going to target him. So if you kind of have to sideline those two and you've got to go to more four guard lineups, which is, you know, if you're going to put East on the floor, he's actually been better in four guard lineups. Well, now you're having to put Trey Gamillion or DeAndre Golston out there, you know, to kind of run minutes at the four. That could be a feast defensively, maybe for like a Jalen Wilson, if Wilson's going to play more at the four spot. So these are the kinds of trade-offs you're having to make. And that's before we even really get to the fact that, you know, a lot of what Missouri's given up defensively, a lot of the stuff that, you know, I think drives fans crazy is the open jumpers they give up. A lot of those have come in rotation on the weak side, you know, when you've got to get one pass away, or sometimes you've got to zone up on, you know, when there's two guys on that side of the floor and you've got to zone up. Missouri gets a little bit out of sorts on the weak side. And Bill Self, just as a general rule, loves to run weak side action. He loves to run flares. He loves to run hammer action. His guys are going to corner drift either way. So there's going to be the question of, okay, what do we do if we got to go four guard and we've got to have, you know, Gamillion or Golston deal with, you know, Wilson? What's going to happen on the weak side of the floor? You know, and that's where a guy like Grady Dick, who is really good off movement, really good getting his feet under him and getting a shot off. He does not drop the ball. His shot pocket is insanely high. He's 6'8". It's hard to close him down and run him off the line. You know, who are you going to have chasing him on that side of the floor? there's just some stuff where I think a lot of it is going to come down to what Missouri can do to disrupt at the point of attack. And, you know, that starts with DeJuan Harris. So there's, we can talk about that if you want, but as you just sort of start to work through stuff in the half court, you begin to see where there's some openings that Bill can exploit, and that this team that I think Kansas can go to with just its base offense that could give Missouri some fits.
Yeah, I don't know how much we need to get into it at this point. I feel like we've been talking, previewing the game for about 30 or so minutes. I'm curious at this point, like, if you think you have a clear idea, or a clear-ish, I should say, idea on how this is going to go.
I think I have an idea of how it's going to go. I think Missouri comes out. I think they've started really well almost every game. I think they'll continue to start well. They'll feel the energy of the building. They might get out to a 6 or 8 point lead. They'll start rolling in that second unit. If all goes well, they might be able to extend the lead a little bit. Maybe they've got, you know, they can get into DeJuan Harris a little bit. Maybe they can, you know, mix some things up in ball screen coverages that sort of slow him a little bit or get him out of sorts before they can get to another under 12 timeout. But I think Missouri can get an edge, but then I think you're going to start seeing Kansas start to get the pace kind of to a neutral ground. I don't think we're going to be at 80 possessions, but I don't think we're going to be at 65. I think we're probably going to be around 68 or 70. And I think Kansas is going to start figuring out stuff that they want to do, particularly, you know, probably in middle ball screens, probably, you know, forcing Missouri to really make some decisions in the middle of the floor. I could see KJ Adams, who's a pretty good roller, being a sneaky important asset here. And then, you know, it's whoever can get rolling for them on beyond the perimeter. The question to me is, what's Missouri going to do in its base offense? You know, they've gotten a little boggy the last couple of games. They've really kind of, you know, looked like a little bit out of sorts in some of their base actions. If they can find a way to, you know, get that consistently producing rim opportunities, I think they can make this a game they win. But I think the momentum will be with them early. The question to me is, who's winning the adjustment battle, you know, starting at the under eight timeout in the first half, and who continues to sort of check the other one and is able to get what they want out of their base stuff.
Yeah, I think at this point we can safely say that if, like, this version of Missouri, this sort of rebuilding version of Missouri, was going to take down Kansas in their building, this was the kind of Kansas team that it was going to have to go against. You know, a team that doesn't have the kind of size that Bill Self is used to playing with, and doesn't really have the elite guards that he's used to having also. DeJuan Harris is a good player. You know, Kevin McCullough is a good player. You know, I think Grady Dick is a pro. I think Jalen Wilson is a pro. I think it's gonna come down to those two guys, and if they're able to sort of prevail and play well, and I think Kansas is going to win the game. But if those guys are struggling and Missouri's, you know, putting them into difficult shooting situations, you know, forcing them to take contested tough shots and they're not making them, then I think this is a game that Missouri can win. So I think, it's going to come down to Mizzou's defense, something that has been questionable at times. I think it's going to be a fairly normal Mizzou game, as far as I think they're going to be able to kind of turn Kansas over, and they're going to get out and play, and they're going to be able to, you know, get some open shots. It's just a matter of whether or not they can kind of continue that enough to win the game. Prediction? You have a prediction?
I think we're probably going to wind it north of 80. I'll take Kansas 86-79. They have a little bit, you know, too much at two spots on the floor. Missouri's doing a lot, you know, by committee. You know, different guys can, you know, carry Missouri each night, but, you know, Grady Dick is a guy who's, you know, already, you know, performing at such a high level, you know, off pretty modest usage. Jalen Wilson does a lot of different things for them. And this is probably the best point guard that Missouri's seen. I think that a lot of the, you know, turnover issues that teams have had is they just haven't had good point guards. Like, even Craig Porter is an average point guard. DeJuan Harris is not an elite level scorer, but he does so much stuff well for them, gets them into what they want to do, has a really great floor game, you know, has played in a ton of big situations, is not going to be fazed by this. And I really think a lot of, you know, what Missouri does is they heat them, you know, the point, you know, they heat the point guard up. And I think that's going to be really hard. So I think Missouri will have stretches where it looks really potent, but I just think Kansas has a steady hand out front. It's got two guys that can get buckets for them. And McCullough, I think, you know, will find a way, you know, contribute. He'll slow somebody down defensively, or he'll, you know, make some shots that, you know, that are timely for him. So I think it'll be a competitive game, but I just think Kansas right now has a little bit too much on the margin for Missouri.
So I guess since one of us, at least one of us needs to be right, I'll take Mizzou. And how it will happen is Mizzou will race out to an early double-digit advantage. That advantage will last through most of the first half. Early in the second half, Kansas will come out and reestablish themselves and trim that lead down and actually take the lead before another late Missouri run puts them away, and they Mizzou ends up winning 89-83. How about that? That
makes sense. So I think we're both sort of in the same spot where we think midway through the second half. So it's, who do we think is going to assert themselves midway through the second half is, I think, where we are at this point. I've got to be the pessimist on the pod, so I'll take that role this week.
Oh, real. If I'm being completely honest, like I had two sort of two plans that I was going to go with, and it was I was only going to be a contrarian to you. So you took Kansas. I'll take Mizzou. Either way, I think this is going to be a competitive game.
It's going to be a fun game. Glad it's going to be a fun.
Yeah,
game.
the styles that these two teams play. It's going to be fast paced. It's going to be a lot of fun. And hopefully Mizzou can kind of get the volume turned up and turn them over. Before we get out of here, Matt, do you have any thoughts on Chris Parker not making it to the Mizzou campus yet again?
I'll believe it when I see it. You know, they filled all their spots. They have filled all their spots that we know they were going to have. If Chris Parker would like to join the University of Missouri basketball team on a scholarship, I'm fine with that. But they have filled the number of allotted scholarships that will be open next year. So, yeah, that's where I'm at. It's ball is in his court.
Yeah. We've talked about how intriguing of a talent he is. Missouri's also going after Braden Pierce, I think is his name.
Yeah.
Guy who. Sort of a late bloomer, but, you know, good size, back end help kind of guy, like a post player. And it'd be interesting to see if they're able to sort of make up ground, there on a guy who's sort of blooming late. I don't know. I'm not opposed to basically like Mizzou basic flipping the roster and going from one of the most experienced rosters, albeit all flopped through grad transfers and all that kind of stuff, to being one of the least experienced rosters and running out, you know, 5-6 freshmen next year. Like I'm okay with that either way.
Yeah. That's why the political capital is big. If you beat Kansas and you get enough wins in year one, the fan base will give you the latitude to do that. So I think that's sort of,
yeah,
it's all of a piece here. You know, it's not just a Q1 thing, but I think, you know, if the fan base sees that, you know, Dennis can build a roster, you know, and that can achieve what he wants, I think that they will give him enough grace to go out and do that next year. It's just, you know, they know they need another big. I think that's why Pierce to me is more interesting. He's a post-grad kid. He played baseball for a couple of years, really was a late comer to basketball. He's at IMG, not on the big like national high school team, but he's on their post-grad team. So he's getting some looks, like NC State and some other, you know, Georgia Tech and others are looking at him really, really hard. I know they had a really, really productive Zoom call a couple of weeks ago, and they really like what Coach Gates is about. But to me, he's sort of the interesting piece there, because they need, I think, another long-term asset, you know, in the front court. And, you know, I'll probably check out a couple of his games this month and just see where he's at. But he is intriguing. His tape looks really good. He's kind of similar-ish to Jordan Butler in that he can play out. He can, you know, play in space a little bit. He's comfortable moving, and, you know, he's not just wedded to the block. So, honestly, at this point, he sort of intrigues me more than the, you know, former top 50 kid who's a freakish athlete at the combo guard spot.
Yeah. So we'll be keeping tabs on that. But for now, it's all about the in season. Kansas is this week. We are going to plan to come back. We had a 1 day delay in this podcast because yours truly was having some technical issues with my recording. But we are back and everything's working. So with all that being said, thanks everybody for tuning in. If you enjoyed this podcast, you should probably make sure that you are subscribed to our podcast feed wherever you download and listen to your podcasts. You can do that at Apple Podcasts, Google Play Store. We are also on Spotify, so go check that out if you are a Spotify subscriber. If you subscribe, you get all the episodes from us at Dive Cuts. You can listen to Matt or Matt, depending on who shows up that week, and me. And here's a little teaser. Next month it will be both Matts. And not me. I'm going on vacation and turning off my phone. But you also get Before the Box Score beamed directly into your phone. Nate and BK are going to be talking all kinds of bowl stuff. I guess Mizzou's doing some bowl game thing here in a couple weeks.
You don't want to talk about Kansas-related matters
transfer
there?
Transfer portal.
You don't want to discuss
transfer
that?
Portal. Transfer portal stuff is happening also. What else is happening in Mizzou football? They got guys opting out.
Discussions about travel itineraries.
Yeah, well, I'm curious. And,
you know, who they're going to go visit.
I am curious if they they address the whole, you know, didn't want to play Kansas thing. Apparently, Gabe got a scoop talking to Desiree Breed Francois, and she answered some questions about that, basically saying, if you want to believe it or not, that they never said anything about not playing Kansas, that they submitted preferences to play before Christmas. That seems to be the company line. I don't know. Like, if I were a football team, I would want to get out of there as soon as possible. Like, let's play another week and let's call it a season. I got it. Like, you know, drinks. Like, I gotta go to recruit. With all that said, yeah, head over to flagshiprocknation.com. Follow Matt on Twitter at Matt J. Harris. You can follow me at Sam T. Snelling. And we will be back next week, maybe with a special guest, to talk all about Mizzou, Kansas, preview UCF. Hopefully this goes well. So until then, thanks for joining us.